You mentioned bevacizumab, and I'd like to get your thoughts on, at this instant, where you see the clinical application of the ECOG 2100 data that was presented by Kathy Miller, looking at bevacizumab and paclitaxel, and kind of just maybe putting aside reimbursement issues that hopefully will get resolved and cost issues, just looking at it purely from a clinical science point of view. Right now, where do you see bevacizumab fitting in the non-protocol management of metastatic breast cancer?
Well, that's a difficult question, and I don't think I have an answer. You know, I am embarrassed by the fact that it's not possible up to now to identify the subset that really benefits from the drug. And to me, moving such an expensive drug in metastatic disease without the possibility of targeting the drug a little bit is really problematic. So in rich countries, you can go for it. You give it to everybody because, you know, you don't know who is going to benefit and who is going not to benefit. But in Europe, I think we are going to have problems in promoting a treatment like that.
And I'm sure that you must sometimes see patients who do not have financial concerns or who are very well off and say to you, listen, I want to know what the best treatment is. I'll pay for it. In that kind of a situation, how do you use the drug?
Again, I would use clinical judgment. I would probably use it in tumors that look very aggressive, proliferating fast, you know, with visceral metastasis, where clearly endocrine therapy cannot be beneficial. That would be probably the situation where I would be comfortable with the use of the drug.
We presented a case the other night in a tumor panel discussion of a woman who did not have aggressive disease. She'd been on hormones for several years, had local disease in the chest wall, asymptomatic bone metastases, had had no prior chemotherapy. She presented with metastatic disease, yet concerned about quality of life, concerned about her appearance. How would you think through, and I've talked to you before about how you approach metastatic disease. I'm curious, again, how you approach it today, having bevacizumab on the table. Again, let's assume there's not a cost issue involved. How would you think through first-line therapy in a patient like that?
Well, first of all, I have no personal experience with the drug, so that's a little problematic. So I have difficulties in evaluating, you know.
That's interesting. So you've not used the drug.
The tolerance. We have had no access to the drug in Europe, with the exception of a few investigators involved in some phase 1, phase 2 trials. So we don't have any large phase 3 running presently. And certainly the drug is not reimbursed. So not having experience makes it difficult to answer. But you see, in my experience, sometimes these women who have been exposed for prolonged periods of time to endocrine treatments in sequence, the day they have exhausted all these possibilities, they are really endocrine resistant. And you think they have not seen chemotherapy, it's going to work. My impression is that it doesn't work that well. And so, based on that experience, if the woman is relatively fit, and given that there is this randomized trial, which was very well conducted, which is highly positive, I think I would have little problems in prescribing it, you know, in giving it.
Combined with what?
With a taxane. Probably, I think if I would use this drug today, I would use it as it was given in the trial. I would not start giving it, for example, as fourth line in combination with fourth line chemotherapy, in combination with other drugs. I would stick to the weekly paclitaxel.